All right, we are back and have a couple of lengthy clips here that I think touch on what we've been talking about today. And I don't know, the last few years. The first one's a bit of a barn burner. It's about 4 days old at this point. It is from MSNBC. And it is Lawrence O'Donnell explaining how it is that, the current coverage of Donald Trump resembles 2016, wherein the mainstream media just loved Trump because they made so much money by covering him. His outrageous antics got large audiences, and that translated into lots of money. And I think it's fair to say that the mainstream media is not treating Trump the way they should. I think Lawrence O'Donnell expresses this better than I can. So let's go with the clip, Mr. McMillan.
It was 2016 all over again today. Donald Trump spoke at his home in Florida for over an hour, and all of the cable news networks, including this one, carried it live. Just like they all did repeatedly in 2016. It would be hard to find a sentence in what Donald Trump said today that did not include at least one lie. Some of the networks tried to play catch up with fact checking after Donald Trump finished speaking, but that, of course, is way too late and utterly useless. No network even attempted to fact check every lie Donald Trump told. Every network has the capacity, especially with these wide screens we now have at home, to run a live scroll at the side of the screen, fact-checking many of Donald Trump's lies. Not all of them, that would be impossible, but many of them, as he speaks. For example, when Donald Trump said, quote, Kamala Harris is not smart enough to do a news conference, the networks could have simply put on the side of the screen, Kamala Harris is a graduate of Howard University and University of California Hastings College of Law. Of course, Donald Trump proved once again today that he is not smart enough to do a news conference by saying something that was provably false in every response he gave to every single question. Most of those were knowing lies by Donald Trump. But many of the falsehoods Donald Trump spread today in his responses came from that vast well of stupidity that takes up most of his brain. The stupidest person who has ever won a nomination for president stood there in front of those reporters and said his opponent isn't smart enough to do what he was failing at right in front of those reporters. And to make a bad news coverage situation worse, none of the networks, none of them, carried Kamala Harris's speech live after the Trump appearance. None of them. This network brought you the last few minutes of Kamala Harris's speech live, but was actually doing Olympics coverage when the speech began and kept doing it. And so, as a first order of business in this hour tonight, we will correct that mistake by presenting to you in full and unedited, as if live, everything that Kamala Harris said today in her speech in Michigan, which all of the networks knew was coming. They knew what time it was coming. They knew how to cover it live, and they didn't. After giving Donald Trump more than an hour of live coverage on all of their networks. It's 2016 all over again. The same mistakes are being made. I have never seen an industry slower at learning from its own stupid mistakes than the American news business. And you cannot expect them in the next 89 days to figure out what they haven't been able to figure out in 9 years, how to cover a Trump for president campaign. One of the Harris-Walz campaign slogans now is, we're not going back. But we just went back today. We went back 9 years. In the press coverage of the campaign, the media coverage. Donald Trump gets credit from the people he lied to today for lying to them. They appreciate it. Reporters understandably and incorrectly believe that the most important thing a candidate can do is answer their questions. But they don't know what an answer actually is. Words spoken after their question marks are not necessarily answers and are never answers. When they come from Donald Trump. There are rumblings in the news media now about Kamala Harris as a presidential candidate not doing what Donald Trump did today stand up in front of reporters and take their questions. And some of the tinier minds in the news media continue to give credit to Donald Trump for standing up and lying in response to every single question they ask. A lie is not an answer. Donald Trump never answers reporters' questions, never. Anyone in the news media who tells you that Donald Trump has answered reporters' questions and Kamala Harris hasn't is lying to you. And they're too stupid to know that they're lying to you because they don't know what an answer is.
And we felt the need to pause it right here to just say, holy mackerel, Lawrence O'Donnell is on a roll. He is not pulling his punches, and man, do we appreciate that.
Donald Trump answered no questions today. None. He stood up there in a room where he made sure the reporters' questions could not be heard by the TV audience. And so when he spoke, the TV audience had no idea what the question was. Most of the questions were terrible. The silliest possible questions you could ask. Questions about campaign strategy. What a waste of a moment with a convicted felon former president to ask questions like that. Here's one question. Mr. President, can you tell us a bit more about your upcoming interview with Elon Musk? That was an actual question to Donald Trump today. Question, what do you think of Kamala Harris not picking Josh Shapiro as her VP? Most of the questions were wasted questions like that. And so Donald Trump could just ramble about anything that came to mind, including lying, of course, about the size of his crowds. And the biggest lie he now tells about the size of his crowds is the lie about which of his crowds was his biggest crowd. He now claims that the crowd that gathered to hear him try to overthrow the presidential election on January 6th was his biggest crowd ever. It wasn't. Investigations have estimated that that crowd was about 53,000 people. Today, Donald Trump said that the biggest crowd he's ever spoken to, that that was it. He actually had a much bigger crowd on his inauguration day, but that was still a smaller crowd than Barack Obama's inauguration day. So he had to lie about that, too, at the time. Today, Donald Trump said that his January 6th speech attracted a bigger crowd than Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech in Washington in 1963, the most famous speech ever delivered in Washington by someone who was not president of the United States. Martin Luther King's crowd was five times the size of Donald Trump's crowd on January 6th. I know it can sound almost tedious that I am fact-checking Donald Trump's crowd size lies today, but that's the way Donald Trump wants it to feel. He has been telling crowd size lies for 9 years, and he wants to wear the news media down to the point where they just accept it. And he has won because no one in that room fought him on that in any way today or on anything else. They did not fight a single lie that he told in that room today. It was the tamest collection of reporters asking questions that you could ever see. Are they afraid of Donald Trump? Are they afraid of the Trump campaign banning them from opportunities to have Donald Trump lie to them in the future?
I want to pause again to give O'Donnell an attaboy for the fine work he's doing here. And, you know, we hearken back to how it was in the debate between Biden and Trump that Trump was not called on the torrent of loony non-facts that were coming out of his mouth. We have to laugh at the notion of, them calling it a press conference where they're tossing him softballs. You know, they could have asked him, I guess, is it, Mr. President, is it hot enough for you? Anyway, Mr. McMillan, roll tape, please.
Now, I'm not advocating that reporters be combative with Donald Trump or anyone. I don't see the need for that. I really don't, even with Donald Trump. But how can you be so tame and timid in the presence of Donald Trump, when you do this?
Do you believe that lie? Why are you refusing the names of world leaders?
Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much.
I did not share classified information. I did not share it.
With your ghostwriter?
With my ghostwriter, I did not. Guarantee you did not.
But the special counsel said it.
No, I did not say that.
Okay.
He did not say that.
But, Mr. President,
let me answer your question. The fact of the matter is, what I didn't want repeated, I didn't want him to know, and I didn't read it to him, was I had written a long memorandum to President Obama why we should not be in Afghanistan. And I was of this multiple pages. And so what I was referring to, I said classified, I should have said it was should be private because it was a contact between the president and the vice president as to what was going on. That's what he's referring to. It was not classified information in that document. That was not classified.
Donald Trump did not hear that sound today. He did not hear that screaming. If Donald Trump gets back in the White House, he will never hear that sound from those people, never. If Vice President Harris stands in front of those same reporters, do you think they will be as tame and reserved and polite as they were with Donald Trump today? Or will it look like this?
The president, I can tell you, has seen a neurologist three times, as it's connected to the to a physical that he gets every year that we provide to all of you.
That's a very basic, direct question.
Wait a second. Eight times, or at least once.
In regards to the president specifically.
Hold on a second.
That much you should be able to answer by this point.
Wait, no. No, wait a minute. Ed, please. A little respect here, please. So every year around the president's physical examination, he sees a neurologist. That's three times, right? So I am telling you that he has seen a neurologist three times while he has been in this presidency. That's what I'm saying.
We should have kept that video rolling because they kept yelling at her. You're not answering the question. They were outraged. But she was actually answering the question. They don't know what an answer is. And what they were pursuing turned out to be a lie. The next day, not one of them had a single question about what they were just screaming about in the White House press briefing room. Because there was never anything to the story that they were pursuing. It turns out a doctor who's a Parkinson's specialist visited the White House a few times, as that doctor had been doing for years before the Biden presidency, and that doctor never once visited the White House to treat President Biden. And all the wrath of those reporters in that room that you just saw, all the wrath that they put into those questions just evaporated. Because they were completely wrong, and they never apologized for their misplaced anger in their treatment of Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. Not one of them dared to yell at Donald Trump today. Not one of them.
Anyway, we got to stop again at this juncture to comment on the rough go Biden was getting and his secretary was getting about, you know, him receiving a neurologic exam. Contrast that with our first segment discussion of how it is Trump, you know, quote, aces a cognitive test, and the mainstream media fails to inform you of how lame that contention was. And by the way, I would second Mr. Miller's suggestion that candidate Harris calls for a full neuropsychiatric examination of Donald Trump to be made public. Well, that's Mr. McMillan's belief. And also John Gartner, psychologist and former assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Not a bad idea.
Not one of them dared to yell, "You're not answering the question." So the special treatment Donald Trump gets from the Supreme Court and elsewhere extends tragically and harmfully and always has to much of the press corps. Here's what happened when Donald Trump was asked a good question by NBC's Garrett Haake. Question: would you direct the FDA to revoke access to mifepristone? Here is what Donald Trump said to that yes or no question, which no matter how many times you read this answer, is not an answer. Trump: sure, you could do things that would supplement, absolutely. And those things are pretty open and humane. But you have to be able to have a vote. After all, I want to do is give everybody a vote. And the votes are taking place right now as we speak. But it's a very good, there are many things on a humane basis that you can do outside of that, but you also have to give a vote. And the people are going to have to decide. The words Donald Trump spoke to those reporters in response to that clear, simple, and important yes or no question were an insult to everyone in that room, and they took the insult. Nothing in those words was an answer, nothing. Donald Trump did not answer questions today. Don't let anyone tell you that lie, that Donald Trump answered questions. He did not. He never does. Anyone who tells you that Donald Trump answered reporters' questions is lying to you. And anyone who tells you that is not smart enough to know what an answer is. Donald Trump is not smart enough to answer questions.
We would like to pause and interject at this point that we think that perhaps Trump's idiotic, crazy answer to that question might reflect his ignorance of what mifepristone is, which, of course, you know, which is his ignorance is something he would wish to hide in his non-answer. But it is still a non-answer, and he was still not called on it.
Anyone who then tells you that Kamala Harris has to answer questions from reporters because Donald Trump already answered questions from reporters is lying to themselves and to you, and you must not allow them to do it. Please crush them on social media when they do it, because they will do it. Now, I hope Kamala Harris answers questions from reporters and from voters, but she has absolutely no greater obligation to do so because of what Donald Trump pretended to do today. The first time Kamala Harris does do a press conference as a presidential candidate, the reporters that were assembled today should all agree among themselves to apply the same rules that they decided to use today. No shouting, no follow-up questions, and no interrupting each other, and no interrupting the candidate, no screaming. Now, I wouldn't suggest those rules if the reporters hadn't just imposed them on themselves today in their participation in what Donald Trump turned into a charade. Now to what the networks did not show you today. Vice President Harris in Michigan today at a United Auto Workers Union Hall, where the union's president, Sean Fain, repeated his wholehearted endorsement and the union's wholehearted endorsement of the Harris-Walz ticket for president and vice president. As usual, vice presidential candidate Tim Walz spoke first and introduced the person he called the next president of the United States, Kamala Harris. Here is what you should have been able to watch as it happened live this afternoon.
Due to time constraints, we're not going to be able to air the full discussion that O'Donnell did of the Harris Walz rally, but we'll give you some of how it started.
They will ban abortion across this country no matter what Congress says. Now, look, it damn right it is, and I don't know why this is so simple or so difficult for these people to understand. You know how things work really well in life and really well with your neighbors and really well in communities? When you mind your own damn business, things work better. Stay out of our business. Stay out of our business. He's not fighting for you. He doesn't know you. He doesn't care about your family. And his running mate is just as dangerous and backward as he is. So look, we know who they are. The choir's ready to sing. This campaign's about the future, your future. Vice President Harris sure knows that. She grew up in a middle-class family. She goes to work every day making sure families are on the front so that they can get ahead and they can get into the middle class. She believes in something so simple and so beautiful. And when we go to these rallies, I say it too. People drive, they sit in the sun, they get there, they stand next to their neighbor for one simple reason. And just like the vice president says, they believe in their hearts in the promise of America. They believe it. They believe it. So, sisters and brothers in the UAW, how great is this going to be? Please join me in welcoming the next president of the United States, Kamala Harris.
Good afternoon, UAW. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Oh, it's good to to be in the House of Labor. It is good to be in the House of Labor. Thank you. Please have a seat. Please have a seat. Okay, so let me just say, first of all, can we hear it again for Tim Walz? Isn't he spectacular? We love our country. We believe in our country. We believe in each other. We believe in the collective. We're not falling for these folks who are trying to divide us, trying to separate us, trying to pull us apart. That's not where the strength lies.
All right, a final illustration of the unhinged nature of Donald J. Trump. We will now again go to MSNBC. In this case, the Inside Jen Psaki program. She brought into the show the guests George Conway, described as conservative attorney, and also Sarah Matthews, who was White House Deputy Press Secretary to Donald Trump. This discussion comes in after establishing the fact that Donald Trump was tweeting that, or whatever he's putting out there, that it was due to AI that they were falsely able to inflate the size of the crowd at the Harris rally at the airport, which is yet another rather unhinged suggestion. Mr. McMillan?
So, don't go back now. What does this post say about Trump and where he thinks he stands in the election?
He is a deep, compensating, narcissistic sociopath. He's a very unwell person. I've been saying this for years. If you go through you don't want to diagnose him, but I think if you look at the diagnostic criteria for narcissistic personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder in the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, he fits every single one of them. It's like the criteria were made to describe him, and we can observe that just from 1 week, but we've been observing it now for 7 years. And what happens to these characters, and these characters are, these are the type of people who become cult leaders, authoritarian dictators. These kinds of people ultimately go too far and they destroy themselves. And when they reach that point of no return, where they're basically spiraling, they become delusional and they can become psychotic. And I think what we saw with this tweet yesterday is that last final collapse of Donald Trump's mental state. I mean, you think about it, saying that there's what, 50, 60, 70,000 people in the aggregate in five rallies in different states. Jonathan Chait put this, of New York Magazine, put it this way today. It's like, that's loopier than saying that the moon landings were staged, because there were tens of thousands of people were there. Mm-hmm. And there are hundreds of people taking photographs and videos. You know, to think that is crazy and to try to sell it to people is just as crazy. He's done. His brain is fried.
So, Sarah, I mean, you can also add to anything George said. By all means, he kind of covered it there. But, I mean, I read that because I think it's important for people to hear, right? I mean, those are Trump's words. He posted them. No one's making anything up here. It's a lot for people to manage on the campaign. You've worked for him. What's going on there behind the scenes?
I think that he feels this election slipping away from him. And that's where you're beginning to see him spiral and cling to these conspiracy theories, as you noted, with the AI-generated crowds, which obviously can be easily disproven. And despite him claiming that there's this photo with no reflection of
the crowd. Don't feel like you have to explain it.
I know. It's insanity, though. It truly is. And there will be people out there that will believe it, though, because he's pushing it. And that's what happens when he gets desperate, is he pushes these conspiracy theories. And not just this one. It's him kind of leaning into Kamala Harris's racial identity, mm-hmm. or him even going after and attacking the popular governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, and his wife. These are not winning campaign messages, but that is what he does when he feels like he's under attack, is he uses these kinds of lines of defense that don't make much sense for campaigning. I can assure you that his campaign team is telling him to talk about policy. They want him to go out there and talk about the economy and immigration and things that voters actually care about. Because I can assure you that none of these things that he's talking about in his rallies or his Truth Social posts are things that are top of mind for most voters.
No question about it. I mean, I know they say they want to talk about policy. That's what everybody says, right? And he's not, doesn't seem capable of that. So I want to, I mean, we can, he seems very unhinged and all the things you said earlier, George, but there is sort of an underlying theme here, right? Which is him kind of questioning what the outcome might be. This is not valid. She's not valid. she's unconstitutional as a candidate, which is not a thing, I think you can confirm.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing in terms of the, you know, other aspects of his efforts that that we should be concerned about. Instead of, we're just calling him unhinged, it was unhinged, but what else are you seeing in terms of his behavior and what they're preparing in that regard?
I think you're right that he's basically preparing to say that the election was stolen again from him. And that's an old trick. I mean, even in 2016, he was saying that if he loses, he was going to have the election, that the election would have been stolen from him. That's something that narcissists do.
Mm-hmm.
They basically blame others. They can't accept their own faults. They can't accept defeat. So they basically came, you cheated. He cheated. She cheated. Everybody cheated. Didn't happen. And he's reaching to the point where, you know, and it's for him, he's not very smart. But he has a reptilian intelligence, and that reptilian intelligence tells him to do that, to deny reality and to get other people to deny reality. But this time, he's really gone over the edge.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at he's not just running for president. He's running from prison. He's already a convicted felon. If that case in Florida ever goes to trial, he's going to get convicted, and he's going to get convicted down the street. Because the Supreme Court's immunity decision only goes so far to protect him. He's looking at prison. He could go to prison for the rest of his life, and he is terrified of that.
Which means, and I agree, it means that he is maybe more desperate, perhaps, than he was even in 2020. Then it was about
which is scary.
Winning an election. Now it's a little different. And you know, I think everybody remembers this, but just to reiterate, you quit the administration after January 6th because of what you saw. That was, of course, the culmination of all of this in 2020. What is it like to sit and watch? I mean, there's pebbles of details here we're seeing, the way he posts things, his preparation to question the outcome, to lead up to something similar.
Yeah, we saw this happen in 2020 where he started questioning the legitimacy of mail-in ballots. So he was laying the groundwork ahead of the election to then say that it was fraudulent. And obviously we know that there is zero evidence of that. And then after the election, he kept clinging to even more crazy conspiracy theories because his advisors were telling him what he didn't want to hear, which was that he lost and there was zero evidence of fraud. Mm-hmm. So then he started listening to people who were telling him what he wanted to hear. And as George noted, I am concerned about how he is going to be more desperate heading into 2024 to ensure that he wins, because I've long said he is not running to make America great again. He is running to stay out of prison. And so if he doesn't win this election, then he's scared of what will happen as a result. And I think we're not talking about enough the things that his campaign is saying, too. Mm-hmm. Even one of his top campaign advisors, Chris LaCivita, mm-hmm. recently said that the election will not be decided on Election Day. It will be on Inauguration Day, and when Donald Trump swears his oath and with his hand on the Bible. And a recent Rolling Stone investigation showed that there are 70 pro-Trump election deniers who will be playing a role as election officials in key battleground states across the country. That is terrifying, because even if there are no evidence of fraud or anything to suggest that Trump won, these people will be pushing the things that he wants, and that is their backup plan.
All right. We're pretty much out of time at this point. We would note that this program, like all of them, was produced by Edward McMillan, and I do want to close with two final notes that another thing that Trump has said lately is that the Harris candidacy is, in his view, unconstitutional. Of course, he can't explain why that is, because I'm sure he's never read the Constitution. This kind of reminds us of when Trump claimed that Obama had been spying on him during his candidacy. And when reporters asked him what charge they might want to bring against Obama for that, he said, treason. Which does bring up our final observation of the program, which is that perhaps the insanity defense may, in the end, be Donald Trump's best friend. After all, we try in our society not to put floridly crazy people in the prison system, per se. I'm Douglas Everett. This has been Radio Parallax. We'll see you soon. And for those listening on KDVS, we want to again say thanks, Guy. And we hope you have fun at Burning Man and expect a full report.
Stay out of the mud.